Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios, you are listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, on this Tuesday, May the 22nd. It is the first day of the Miami Dolphins OTA season, and we got a little bit to talk about. Now, look, the OTAs, I know as fans, we're all excited. It's the first time we're seeing Tannehill on the field for the first time. It's the first time the entire team, for the most part, is all together. And it's the start, really, of the 2018 season, as you got the team is all together, like I said. But you got to pump the brakes a little here. These are May OTAs. They're May OTAs. It's mainly the guys showing up, doing weight training, doing conditioning training, and they're on the field a little bit in shorts and, you know, in like a mesh jersey. There's no pads really here, or there's some pads, but they're in shorts, so like they're in their skulls. And there's not much going on. There's really not much going on. There's not much to report about. It's guys essentially playing flag football at the end of the day here. So it's tough to get any, you know, real news out of what's happening in practice. It's tough for somebody to shine in an atmosphere like this. So if you start reading reports online from whoever saying, this guy looked great, this guy wasn't. Look, they're not hitting. They're not even in full pads. It's just guys running around playing flag football. Nobody's going to shine here in May in these OTA seasons. Like I said, I know we're all excited, but you got to pump the brakes here. It's just May. And really, the only thing that can happen here with these OTAs is probably something bad, and that somebody can get hurt. As I said, nobody's going to shine. Nobody's going to make a name for themselves. Nobody's going to win a job. Nobody's going to, you know, pass someone here on the depth chart. It's just the only news that can come out of this these next 3 days is really bad news and somebody who, you know, gets hurt in one of those non-contact injuries, which cross our fingers that doesn't happen. Now, today's practice on Tuesday was closed to the media. Really, the only news to come out of that, there's a couple things, really was the three guys who were lost for the entire 2017 season, which were Raekwon McMillan, Tony Lippett, and Ryan Tannehill, were full participants today in the quote-unquote practice. I even hate to call it a practice because it's really not a full practice, but it is for the OTA season. Also, it was reported that Ryan Tannehill has sort of been cleared and has no limitations. And today there was a little clip that they shot of him running on the field with no knee brace. And I know some fans lost their minds. Oh my God, he's not wearing a knee brace. Some fans were so excited. That must mean he's totally healthy. And some fans are so upset. How are they crazy not letting him wear a knee brace? Guys, like I said, if you go into the backyard of your house right now with your kid and throw around the football, that's essentially what they're doing in these OTAs. We've seen pictures of Tannehill jumping off the top of a boat. That was far more dangerous than anything he will do the next 3 days in these OTAs. It's also been reported that he's been playing a lot of basketball. That is far more strenuous than anything he'll be doing over the next 3 days. Do not read anything into these OTAs and what comes out of the practices and stuff. Tannehill and his knee, you know, should make it through these OTAs where it's I can't even stress this enough. It's like a nothing practice. It really is. It's very vanilla. It's very bland. There's nothing. And hopefully the Miami Dolphins, as we've talked about on this podcast, I won't rehash it again, they take it slow with Ryan Tannehill. They don't push him too much. They don't pressure him too much. They don't do anything crazy. So hopefully they take it slow. I think they'll take it slow in the OTAs because it's almost impossible not to. But throughout the rest of, you know, May, well, not really May, but into June and those OTAs they have in June, they have a couple there. Then as we get into the first part of August in training camp, just take it slow. Nothing matters until week one and they play the Tennessee Titans in September. Nothing matters. Nothing in the preseason matters. Nothing in these practices matters. I know everyone thinks, well, he's got to gel with his new teammates. It's so overrated, folks. It really is. This is the game of football. They've been playing it their whole lives. Yes, you have to get on the same page with the wide receivers and stuff, but you don't have to push it. It happens. It comes naturally in time, and you can't risk his knee because we know this is a house of cards. If he goes down, you know, it's over. I mean, this season's over if he goes down. So, Tannehill, he had his first practice today. I think Tom Ernest, he said it was the first time he was on the practice field with his teammates in 290 days, if the math is right. So it's been a while. And tomorrow he will be in practice again. And that one will be open to the media. So I'm sure all the reporters will be down there watching the practice. They're going to be putting their spin on stuff. But again, take it with a grain of salt. Take it with a grain of salt. It's just May. And these are just OTAs. No pads, no contact, no nothing involved. And also, tomorrow on Wednesday, Ryan Tannehill will be meeting with the media for the first time in a long time. Now, he will probably be asked every question 6 ways till Sunday about his knee. And I'm sure he will give the media absolutely nothing. He will be as bland and as boring as you can be. He will say the same things he said last year this time, that he feels great and he's ready to go. And we all know how that ended in August. So he will meet with the media Wednesday for the first time, but I expect nothing to come from it. You know the questions he's going to be asked, and we can probably write down what he will say in response to those questions at this time right now on Tuesday night as I record this, and we know how he's going to answer, and we're going to get no new insider news. Like I said, last year this time, he was saying the same exact thing. He feels great, ready to go, no issues, and boom, the knee gave out on August 3rd. So whatever he says tomorrow, I'm not going to read nothing into it because it really means nothing at this point. What else? Evan Silva had an interesting stat that sort of ties into Ryan Tannehill as well. That for the first 12 regular season games of the 2018 season, weeks 1 through 12, that the Miami Dolphins and quarterback Ryan Tannehill faced the easiest schedule pass defense-wise. So looking at all the opponents, weeks 1 through 12, that they're facing a bunch of bad secondaries. It's the long and short of it. So for Tannehill, come week 1, as we've said a lot on this podcast, there's really no excuses for him this year. I know he didn't play last year, but he's been in the league long enough. He can come back from an injury and play. He can come back from a missed season and play. I think certain parts of the fan base, certain parts of the media have to stop babying him and treat him like a real quarterback and stop making excuses for him. On paper, sure it's on paper and a lot can change, but on paper right now, he is going to face the easiest pass defense schedule for the first 12 weeks of the season. That's what you want. As a fan of the Miami Dolphins, as a fan of Ryan Tannehill, you want to see him, you know, facing bad secondaries. And that's what Miami is looking at to start off the 2018 season. So that was an interesting stat I saw today online per Evan Silva, an NFL reporter. So just something to keep in the back of your mind. In other news, and this sort of ties into Miami, but sort of not. The Philadelphia Eagles today cut linebacker Michael Kendricks. Now, why is this news? It's news because the Miami Dolphins have done research on him for many years. If you head all the way back to when they traded for Kiko Alonso, Michael Kendricks was almost part of that trade. And they could have possibly gotten him instead of Alonso. Instead, it ended up being Alonso. Even last year, there were talks that Philadelphia was trying to move him in a trade and that Miami was very interested. So the fact that now he is a free agent on the open market wouldn't shock me if Miami shows some interest. Now, here's what's working against Miami. Number one, they have no money to spend. They have zero money. Now, of course, that'll change next week when they get $17 million on the salary cap. But a part of that has to also go to signing the rookies because they have not signed one rookie yet. They're waiting for June 1st when they get that $17 million from the Sioux post-June cut. So a big chunk of that money is going to go there. They're also going to want to hold on to some of this money and carry it over to 2019. So they're going to want to hold on to a chunk of it as well. They're going to want to have a chunk of that money be just an emergency fund, i.e. if something happens again to Ryan Tannehill and they got to go out and sign. It won't be Jay Cutler, but someone along those lines to add to their quarterback room. I know they said last week at the rookie mini camp with Adam Gase that that's not what they're going to do and they're going to go with the guys. That's a lie. If something happened to Ryan Tannehill tomorrow, they would be out there on the open market looking to add a quarterback and a viable quarterback to start. So don't believe that. So they're going to save some money. So that $17 million is going to be split many ways. Some for the rookies, some for an emergency fund, some money to carry over to 2019. And what's ever left, that would be left to if they could sign somebody. And someone like Michael Hendricks would be in that boat. To me, this is very similar to when the Broncos cut C.J. Anderson. Because Miami's had this type of interest in him as they did in C.J. Anderson. The problem was the timing was just awful. Was just awful as to when they were cut and released. So Miami might have interest here in adding a quality linebacker. And just because the Dolphins drafted Jerome Baker, that doesn't mean they've sort of fixed their linebacker unit. Yes, Raekwon McMillan's back, but we really don't know what he is. We hope he's good and we think he's going to be good, but we really don't know. He could be a total bust for all we know. He could stink for all we know. I don't think he will, but he could. He really could. So we'll see, but just a name to watch out there as someone who Miami might kick the tires on and might make a play for if the money's right. And so we'll just watch that. The Miami Dolphins also announced a few days ago that they will not bring in competition for punter Matt Hawk, which is a little surprising because Hawk last year, inconsistent. He was okay at times, but at times he was also bad. He did have two games last year where he was really bad, where his net average was just 29 yards, so he's very inconsistent. And those games were against Kansas City and the Charger game. He was just bad. He did have one game where he was just out of this world. That was against the Broncos, where seven of his nine punts, he pinned them inside the 20. So that's one of those days where everything goes right. But overall, Matt Hawk, nothing special. Okay punter. He didn't really hurt Miami, but he didn't really help him either. And the fact they're not going to bring in another body to push him through training camp and stuff and such is a little surprising. But it's still very, very early as well. We're still in May. And what a franchise says in May can change quickly come July and August. So we'll see if they don't bring someone else in. I think they will. I think they almost have to. But hey, Rizzy loves this kid. Rizzy raves about this kid. Rizzy thinks he is the best by far. So maybe they won't, but we'll see. I think it would be a mistake. I think it doesn't hurt to bring someone else in. Rizzy's excuse for Hawk last year was that, you know, he kicked a full season in college. Then in his workouts for the draft and such, he was always working out for teams and doing a lot of punting there. Then, boom, he goes right into the mini camps and he goes right into the season. And essentially, his leg was just dead come the middle of the year last year, which that's a fair excuse, actually. I can sort of buy that. The problem was Hawk had one of his two worst games of the year last year in September. So there's that. And also just overall last year, he just wasn't the most consistent. It wasn't that great. But I'm not going to worry too much here about the punter. But I think it would be a mistake not to bring someone else in. In other news, the Jay Ajayi story, which I won't spend a lot of time on because he's really not a member of the Dolphins, but it ties in. And I know we talked about it last week some. He is being sued by the owner of a property saying that Jay trashed it the week after the Super Bowl. and that, you know, then he also shoved the owner of the property, and the owner of the property placed a lawsuit saying he was assaulted and that Jay Ajayi owes him a ton of money. Well, Jay Ajayi and his people left out, gave their side of the story, and it is the exact opposite. Jay Ajayi said he never even rented the house. It was someone he knows who rented the house. Second, he claims he didn't trash the house or shove the owner of the house. He's saying that the owner of the property was there the entire time, and he sort of hints that he was partying it up with him, and he knew exactly what was going on in the house. Jay Ajayi claims he left the property several days early. He didn't, and that no security or police were asked to show up to physically remove him from the property. So his story is the total opposite of what the property owner is claiming, and clearly someone's lying. Now, who's lying? I have no idea. It could be the property owner. It could be Jay Ajayi, but their stories are polar opposites. Someone's lying, and it'll be cleared up in court. So there's really nothing else to say about that, and I'm not going to get into it much more than that. One more story, and then I'm going to be joined by Jeff from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. He is one of the co-hosts of the new Landon and Jeff show that we have here on DolphinsTalk.com. We're going to talk about a few things, but I got one more story first. Concerning the Miami Dolphins, it was reported this week that the NFL is changing their policy on how they award Super Bowls. And the days of a city and a franchise putting in a bid to win a Super Bowl are long gone and over. And that now there's going to be a four-city rotation, and then every now and then they're going to sprinkle in a new team. And the four cities are Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami are three locks. Those three are going to happen. They're in the rotation. Now, the fourth one is down to two cities fighting for that final spot. It is New Orleans and Arizona. And from all reports, New Orleans has the lead. So they're probably going to win the fourth spot. So Super Bowls are going to rotate between four cities. You can after the next few are done, because I think they're passed out through 2026 or so, or 2025. I forget the exact year. But once that's done, it's going to just rotate between four cities. Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami, and we're just going to call it New Orleans because they're going to win it, okay? So those four. Now, how it's going to work, if you're another city, say you're Atlanta, say you're Arizona, since they're not going to win this spot here, say you're the Cowboys in Dallas and San Francisco, every so many years, it might be every 5 or 6 years, as they're in the middle of a rotation, they're going to just ask you, do you want to host the Super Bowl in, say, the year 2030? I'm just making up a year. And say the NFL asks the city of Atlanta, do you want to host the Super Bowl in the year 2030? They can say yes, they can say no. If they say yes, boom, they got it. If they say no, they're going to move on to another city. But for the most part, the Super Bowl is just going to be played in four cities. And that is it. The league is just changing their whole process. They don't want the cities to jump through hoops anymore and putting together these big presentations where they work for years on them. They're putting a bid and there's a vote and it goes on forever. Boom. Done. No more. Those days are over. It's going to be Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami, and New Orleans in a rotation. And if a team builds a new stadium, say like Minnesota, if they build a new stadium, eventually they're going to get a Super Bowl, you know, every, you know, out of 10 years, maybe out of the 10 years in a decade, once or twice, they're going to give a city not in the rotation a Super Bowl. So it might go Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Miami, New Orleans, Los Angeles, Las Vegas. Let's push off Miami for a year. Let's offer it to San Francisco. And San Francisco will say yes or no. Nobody's going to say no, folks. And then, boom, San Francisco, then back to Miami, back to New Orleans, back to Los Angeles. It's just going to go in rotations where they sprinkle other cities in every now and then. I love it. This is the way they should have been doing it for years. Nobody wants to go to a Super Bowl in Minnesota. Nobody wants to go to a Super Bowl in Indianapolis. Nobody wants to go to a Super Bowl in New York. Nobody wants to go to these cities. A, it's freezing cold that time of year. B, it's just not convenient for fans. and see the cities, and no offense if you live in one of these cities, are flat out dull and boring. The Mall of America, I'm sorry, is not exciting for people traveling from around the country. A shopping mall is a shopping mall. I don't care how big it is. So the NFL has learned a lesson here, and they're like, look, we got four hotbed cities. Las Vegas. Who doesn't want to be in Las Vegas? Los Angeles. It's Los Angeles. Second biggest media market in the whole country. Nice weather. Boom. Miami. It's Miami. Nice weather. Great city. Fun city. And then you throw in New Orleans, probably the best one of the bunch. And we're going to have the big game there every year. And Miami is in the rotation. It's very good for the Miami Dolphins. It's very good for the franchise. It makes the franchise worth more. It makes the franchise more appealing. It's good identity for the franchise. Of course, this is all stuff on the business side of the house. And if anybody is happier than a pig, and you know what, right now, it is Stephen Ross. Because every dime he put into renovating what is now known as Hard Rock Stadium is worth its weight in gold now. Because the Miami Dolphins, every 4 years or so, will get a Super Bowl in Miami. So kudos to the owner, Stephen Ross, as he pulled off another successful business deal here by having the foresight to fix up the stadium. Now he's in the rotation, one of four cities to get a Super Bowl in a full-time rotation. So the Miami Dolphins got some great news here with that. And look, that's just very good news overall for the people of South Florida, which I know many of you who listen to this podcast are from. And it's also very good news just for the Miami Dolphins, because that's just added revenue, added money coming into the franchise and such. So very good news there. So I'm going to take a quick break now, and when I come back, I will be joined from Jeff from the Landon and Jeff Show, and we're going to talk about two topics. The first topic we're going to talk about is sort of why the national media is so down on the Miami Dolphins. And Jeff's a very good person to talk about this, as he used to work for ESPN, and he's also a three-time Emmy Award winning producer for the Golf Channel. He knows national media. That's where he makes his money. That's where he lives his life, national media. He has very good insight into the world of ESPN, stuff like that. So Jeff, we'll talk a little bit about that. And we'll also talk about an article written by Miami Dolphins reporter for USA Today, Antoine Staley. He put out last week asking if the Miami Dolphins regret giving Ryan Tannehill the three-year contract extension they gave him in 2015. So we also touch on that topic as well, and it's a very interesting discussion. So right after this break, we will get to Jeff from the Landon and Jeff Show.
The Landon and Jeff Show is a brand new Miami Dolphins podcast here on DolphinsTalk.com. Jeff is a three-time Emmy Award-winning TV producer, and Landon is his 12-year-old son. Both are diehard Miami Dolphins fans who have their unique perspective on the team and the happenings taking place with the Miami Dolphins. Be sure to check out the Landon and Jeff Show exclusively right here at DolphinsTalk.com.
Joining me on the hotline is Jeff from the Landon and Jeff Show right here at DolphinsTalk.com. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Landon would have loved to join us, but it's past his bedtime.
That's okay. We are recording this late at night, so that's why that was mentioned. So let's talk about a couple things here. First thing I want to talk about is a lot of the national outlets, whether it's ESPN or even some of the other national outlets like Pro Football Talk and stuff, they're all picking Miami to be, you know, one of the worst teams in the league in 2018, if not the worst team in the league in 2018. And look, I understand part of it is the quarterback situation in Miami, you know, isn't the greatest. It's a little unsettled to say the least. But what are your thoughts? I think it's a bit extreme to pick them to be one of the worst teams in the league in 2018. What are your thoughts on this, Jeff?
Well, full disclosure, I used to work at the Worldwide Leader, and I understand how, you know, things work there. And a lot of it is based on they have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, to fill on all of their different content outlets. And there's so many different outlets that they have, right? So they have to say something. So someone's not going to be happy this time of year, because you and I both know that a ranking of a team in May is irrelevant. It means absolutely nothing. Because I looked up the standings just before this call, so do a little research on this topic. And last time I checked, we're all 0-0. The Dolphins are, in fact, tied with the Patriots right now. We're all 0-0. None of this matters. But what does matter are when guys kind of get in production meetings and they're working on shows and stuff, it's guys you know and guys you trust. And, you know, what I tend to wonder is how many people in that room, you know, because let's look at geography here. ESPN is in Bristol, Connecticut. What's the closest NFL team to Bristol, Connecticut? The Patriots. Hartford, not real far away. You know, there's a lot of former Patriot guys who work there. And there's a lot of guys who grew up in New York market or, you know, the New England market who work at ESPN because it's just, again, it's a regional job, you know, to kind of get started. They don't like Miami anyway. So they're never going to give us the benefit of the doubt. And I also think, you know, a lot of this is probably a reflection of Mike Tannenbaum because, you know, Mike Tannenbaum, obviously, as we both know, worked for the Jets. But how successful was he in the Northeast? And once you kind of get that reputation as somebody who's not going to be that, you know, successful, it tends to domino and tends to stick with you. If you look at it for another sport, other example kind of comparison is look at Terry Francona. Terry Francona, obviously beloved manager of the Red Sox, and it hates me saying the name Red Sox. But, you know, Tito left and came to work with us at ESPN on Sunday Night Baseball, and we all just got to see what a wonderful person this guy was. Forget being a great manager. The minute he took over the Indians, everybody was starting to pick, oh, you know, Tito's going to turn this thing around. Tito's great. It's because you spent time with him. So you have to think, who are the influencers in the building, and do they have successful track records with the personalities that are in Miami, and or do they have successful relationships with the personalities in Miami? And I think the answers are unequivocally no, and that's one of the reasons we're there. But come on, you think we're worse than the Cleveland Browns? I mean, no. The Browns just signed up to do Hard Knocks. I mean, are they? What are they going to do next? Are they going to start booking ticker tape parades in February? I mean, this is ridiculous, the amount of love a team that can't win. Because last I checked, Hugh Jackson's still the head coach, right?
Yep, and he's won one game in 2016 and 2017. He's won one game. And the head coach of the Browns, he's won one game. And how he's still there is beyond me, but God bless him, I guess. He's got a little bit of luck on his side. And like you said, it is located pretty much right next to the New England Patriots. And it's also not that far away from the Jets and even the Buffalo Bills. There is a Northeast bias there, which it is what it is. One of those things, you can't get around it. And plus ESPN, as you well know, they hire a lot of people from Syracuse University, which is located in the heart of Jets country and the Buffalo Bills. So they're going to get that people inside that location who are probably not fans of the Miami Dolphins. And when it comes to the on-air talent, you know, even the same there, a lot of those guys worked for a lot of places that were not Miami. So I understand that, but I made a quick list of the teams who I think are clearly worse than Miami as of right now on paper. And I came up with six, and then I came up with two other teams that are probably on par, being either, however you want to spin it, just as bad or just as good as Miami. Let me run down the list, and you tell me if you
please do.
See it the same way. Number one is the Indianapolis Colts. I think they're worse than Miami.
I mean, everyone says the reason Miami is not going to be good is because Ryan Tannehill hasn't played in a couple of years. When's the last time Andrew Luck played?
Exactly. And played at a high level, too.
No.
Number two, next is the team you just mentioned, the Cleveland Browns. Clearly, I mean, not even worth talking about. They just don't win, and they had a nice offseason. But from where they were, having a nice offseason means what? You win three games this year? I mean, it's not like they signed guys who are going to the NFL Hall of Fame. They signed Landry, obviously, Tyrod Taylor, and Carlos Hyde were their big signings.
Carlos Hyde.
Who's, you know, he's an okay running back. I'm not knocking the guy. But, you know, it's still DNA. It's Carlos Hyde. Nothing's going to get you that excited either. They're, you know, yes, they got slightly better, but when you won zero games, slightly better means what? You win three, maybe four tops. I'm not sold on the Browns.
I mean, unless unless they sign LeBron James and are waiting to announce until after they finish the playoffs, the Browns aren't winning more than four games.
No, they probably should sign him because everywhere he goes, he wins. I'll give him that. And it don't matter who's around him sometimes either. But that's a different conversation. The next team are some teams we know very well, the New York Jets. Now, yes, they got their franchise quarterback in the draft. They have nothing around him. And I think, at least for this year, now look, long term, they might be setting themselves up great, which I actually think they are. But at least just for this year, in 2018, I would not expect big things out of the Jets because they just don't have a lot around him. So would you agree on the Jets?
Well, yeah, and that's assuming that Darnold's any good. I mean, how many top quarterbacks have we seen over the past decade? So you have that. The one thing about the Jets I will say is I do like Todd Bowles. I liked him when he was an assistant in Miami. I think he manages to get the most and squeeze the most out of that talent, and defensively he'll have them ready to play, and they won't give up like dogs. You know, I could make an argument after hearing this. I mean, I could talk myself into Indy being the worst team in the league before I could into – You know, Miami being anywhere near there. But, yeah, I agree with your list. I have a couple others. So I'm curious to hear the rest of yours.
Okay. Next team is also inside the AFC East, just like the Jets would be the Buffalo Bills. So the same reasoning as the Jets. Long term, they might be fine. This year only, it might be a step back. They have no wide receivers to speak of. LeSean McCoy is a good running back. Not going to knock him. But they lost three starters on their offensive line, and if it's not Josh Allen, then it will be A.J. McCarron, who's, you know, nothing special there. So for them, just for this year at least, I think they might be worse than Miami, the Bills. And I'll give you the two other teams I think are clearly worse are Chicago and Arizona. Those teams, they put no fear in me at all. I just don't see it with either team, Chicago and Arizona. And if you look at the teams I just mentioned, Miami plays Chicago. They play Indianapolis. They play two games against the Bills and two games against the Jets. Miami's schedule this upcoming year is not – I mean, look, every game in the NFL is tough, don't get me wrong, but it's not as awful, let's just say, as it was last year when they had the NFC South and the AFC West. This year is a little bit easier. So those are six teams I think are clearly worse. I have two others, but let's wait on them. Who's on your list?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference I have from you is I'm going to throw the Raiders on that list.
Okay.
I love John Gruden. John Gruden's a wonderful person. You know, I know a lot of the folks who worked with him on Monday Night Football. He hasn't coached in the league in a lot of years. There's
many years.
There's probably going to be an adjustment period. There's probably also going to be a guy who you remember doing something or watching, you know, film getting ready for a TV broadcast where you saw the one game or the two games a year that probably got you excited about someone who, when you get him in the practice and film room every week, you're going to realize wasn't what you thought he was. So when you have guys like that leave, I mean, how many guys can leave the game for that long and come back in and be instantly successful? It's going to take a while. And I think Chucky may have a harder season than you think. And also, I think their schedule is a little more difficult than
that's a tough division.
Than probably they would
division.
Want. They're in a tough, they're in a brutal division. And if the Chargers really got better, and you got to look at this with the Chargers, just the uncertainty of knowing where they're playing is going to be a lot better for them.
Exactly.
You know, if the Broncos are going to be better, the Chiefs are going to be really good if Mahomes can do his thing. Someone's going to have to be bad in that division. To me, that's the Raiders.
It might be the Raiders. The two other teams I had, one of them is the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that never fails to always underachieve. Dalton, pretty much very similar to Ryan Tannehill in many ways in that good, but, you know, isn't thought of as that great guy to take it to the next level. So I had Cincinnati on that list, who I think, you know, they might not be clearly worse than Miami, but they're probably in this – let's just say they're in the same neighborhood. They're in the same ballpark. And the last team is a team who has been very good for many years, but clearly is taking it apart and rebuilding it, is the Seattle Seahawks. Yes, they have Russell Wilson, but they sort of are rebuilding it from the ground up again. And I think, once again, just for 2018 in a vacuum, not talking long term, for 1 year, I think they're probably on par with Miami, if not even slightly worse right now. So those teams, I think, So you can make a case, as I always said, nobody is saying Miami should be in these worthless rankings, that Miami should be, you know, top 10, top – nobody's saying that. But last or 31st or 29th is a bit extreme. In my book, you want to rank them 20, 21, or 22. That's more than fair. And I think that's what most reasonable fans of the Miami Dolphins think they should be ranked. And like I said, we went through a bunch of teams. On paper right now, today, I think Miami is slightly better than at least 8 teams, maybe 9. In that neighborhood, you know, if you want to rank them 20, 21, 22, I think that's what most fans think. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, and the beauty of it is we're all 0-0 right now, and yep. We get a whole season out of us to see the reality. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about off-season rankings. You know, where I really want to see is improvement and continuity. And I think the biggest question mark I have, aside from the ones you guys have covered over the past couple of weeks, because the best part about this time of year is we get to redissect the same thing, since there's nothing to talk about.
Exactly.
Is, you know, Coach Gase has brought in a lot of new coaches, and they seem to be the coaches he wants, and that's all great. But again, there's still a cohesiveness of having your staff together and everyone knowing what to do. And even though these guys have worked with him at certain stops, they haven't all done it together. And I'm really interested to see how this pans out now that he has some people he wants next to him. Does this make the leap? Because, you know, one thing you can argue, and again, I hate complimenting the Patriots. I know you do too. But they draft guys. They don't just draft better guys. They draft guys and coach them better. And yes. That's when they become better players. And they put them in positions to succeed. And, yeah, they probably draft some guys, you know, that they had different eyes on than the rest of the teams. But even so, they get guys there and they make them better. And that's what I need to see from the Dolphins. That's what the next couple months are all about, is how do we take flash in the pan like Kenyon Drake, who showed something, and how does a new running backs coach, who Adam Gase hand chose, how does he make him better? That's what's going to be the difference between where we end up on your list or if the pundits are right, and we are the worst team in the league.
Yeah, and one last thing before we move on to something else is, I remember a few weeks back I had on Chris Whittingham from 560 WQAM in Miami, and we talked about this a little bit at the end of the interview I had with him, and we went through real quick the 2017 power rankings they had out there in March and May and stuff, and, you know, all these experts couldn't have been more wrong. If you looked at the teams they picked in the bottom 5 or 6 last year, they were Jacksonville, Minnesota, the Saints. I mean, it was every team that went far in the playoffs. They had ranked at the bottom. I think it was Jacksonville, Minnesota, the Saints, and the Buffalo Bills were ranked, you know, in the bottom 5 or 6 of most, if not all, power rankings last, you know, May, March, you know, in this time of the offseason. And I also think they all had the Philadelphia Eagles that ranked, you know, either 20, 21, 22. So, these things this time of year, as I always say, you can't get worked up about them, but it is sort of fun to talk about because what else is there to talk about this time of year? So that's that. Next topic I want to talk about, there was an article written by Antoine Staley, who we have on this podcast all the time, great friend of the show, and he pointed out that this past May 19th is the 3-year anniversary of the Miami Dolphins signing quarterback Ryan Tannehill to a contract extension, $96 million extension, which included a $45 million signing bonus. It's the 3-year anniversary. And the question he raised is actually a little bit interesting, that do you think, as we sit today on May 20th, although this might not air until like the 21st or 22nd, do the Miami Dolphins regret giving that extension to Ryan Tannehill at this time? It's a little bit interesting of a question to sort of to think back now, as we've seen him obviously play well in 2016 before the injury, but, you know, he's been hurt and he hasn't played since. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think they regret that extension they gave to him on May 19th, the year 2015?
I mean, I guess the first question is, what do you get someone on the third year anniversary of a $45 million guaranteed contract extension, right?
Exactly.
I didn't really research that one very well. And I guess the good news is neither me or you are ever going to need to find out the answer to that question.
Yeah, no
one's giving us
so
that type
matter.
Of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, plus no one's giving us that type of extension.
Exactly.
So we'll
never
have to worry about a third year. You know, I don't think you regret giving him the extension because, you know, the quarterback position, obviously you need to solidify it. And again, if you go through team by team, there, you know, the teams that are successful have blue chip quarterbacks. And if you have any inkling that a guy can become a blue chip quarterback, the last thing you want him to do is go somewhere else over money. I mean, otherwise, you know, we just saw, I think Ndamukong Suh is going to be the perfect example of why you pay for quarterbacks and sometimes overpay for quarterbacks. Is I love Suh. I loved, you know, the idea of getting him. I thought about the transformational nature he could provide to our defense, you know, the education and whatever. And at the end of the day, he's a defensive tackle. And a defensive tackle cannot impact the game and change the game the way a quarterback can. So you have to take the chance. I mean, could you imagine if you were a Washington Redskins fan and all of a sudden Minnesota this year is raising the Lombardi Trophy because you chose not to pay Kirk Cousins? Like you just can't run that risk. And you know what? I mean, again, let's see how many cliches we could work into one soundbite here, right? You don't know when injuries are going to happen. Everyone can get injured on any play.
Exactly.
If you know, you had to protect yourself. Now, the one big disagreement I have with what the Dolphins have done at the quarterback position is, and it's ironic that they brought in Ron Wolf to consult. You know, Ron Wolf, the great GM of the Green Bay Packers, said you draft a quarterback every year. I don't know if you do it every year. I agree wholeheartedly with your analysis this year. It's after the first four or even Lamar Jackson that none of these other guys are going to be worth anything. So why are you wasting a spot? But there has to be a plan of every couple of years drafting somebody because the worst, you know, case happens is you end up, you know, Arizona or Kansas City ends up with Mahomes while they have Alex Smith. Well, then they have a trade chip. You know, the Patriots, how many quarterbacks have they traded and gotten assets back? So you'll recoup that second and third round pick down the road. But eventually you have to make that mark. And, you know, we saw what happens to a team when you're ill prepared for your quarterback to go down. If you think your quarterback's Superman, then you know, you're probably not doing your due diligence of being prepared.
Yep, absolutely. And I am with you 100%. I do not, or I would not, regret the extension Miami gave him. Because to now look back at this in hindsight, the injury part, it's almost unfair because you couldn't have seen that coming. So to think back in 2015, well, I know he will get hurt because up until that time, he never got hurt. And he got hit so many times, and he got hit so hard, he bounced up every time. So to look back and say, well, I knew he was going to get – no, that's unfair. The other thing is when they paid him at that time on March 19th in 2015, that these days is a cheap contract for a quarterback. The money for quarterbacks in this league has skyrocketed to insane levels. So you look back at that contract, $96 million with the signing bonus and stuff. I mean, it's pretty much a cheap contract these days for a starting NFL quarterback. Yes, the injuries hurt, and it sort of derailed the plan, let's just say. But you can't look back in hindsight, and you can't look back now 3 years later and think it, and sort of regret that move. I think that's unfair. He was playing the best ball of his life until he got hurt. That can't be denied. And hopefully now when he comes back in 2018, he picks up right where he left off. We don't know if he will, but we all hope. And I think – I don't know if he'll pick up at that level, at least right away. But I think he'll play well. I do think he'll play well in 2018. And, yeah, I don't regret that as a fan. And I don't think any fan of the Miami Dolphins should regret that. But I thought it was an interesting article because, you know, that's what we do as fans. We look back at things in hindsight and go, wow, that was a mistake. Or, boy, that was genius. One, sometimes it's just a matter of luck at the end of the day, how things break and stuff, which here it was a little bit of bad luck with the knee injury. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. So I think that's all we have for today. Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast, and we will be looking forward to the next Landon and Jeff show for sure. I know this time of year there's really not a lot to talk about. So any idea when the next show might be out?
Yeah, well, Landon is finishing finals this week. So he said to me, and by the way, when you're 12 years old and you have finals, that's kind of crazy. But this is his last week of school. And he said to me, he goes, Dad, he goes, as soon as we're done with school and I get these finals done, he goes, we're just diving into the podcast. So Landon has a couple theme shows.
Okay,
he has
great.
A couple theme shows. I think he wants to do something, you know, with like the top five Dolphins that have kind of existed in his lifetime of being a fan, which gosh, it's a really slow
poor
list
kid.
Compared to
poor kid.
Compared to some of us. I know, yeah. I know. But I would like to say, if anyone's out there listening and has ideas that they would like to hear, just leave it in the comment section on DolphinsTalk.com, and we'll happily accommodate. But we're gonna really ramp up when the Dolphins go to training camp, and July starts to hit. You will get weekly Landon and Jeff shows.
Awesome, sounds great, Jeff. Thanks so much for joining me tonight on the podcast, and we'll be back right after this.
Meet current Miami Dolphins running back Frank Gore at Sinbad Sports on Thursday, May 31st at 7 p.m. for a special autograph signing. The former Miami Hurricane and current Miami Dolphins running back will be appearing for a special VIP autograph signing where you can get a picture with and your memorabilia signed by the future Hall of Fame running back. Check out Sinbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida, and tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
All right, I'm back. And once again, I would like to thank Jeff from the Landon and Jeff Show for joining me on the podcast tonight. Always great to have on Jeff. And we will have some new episodes of the Landon and Jeff Show out to you shortly in the coming week. So be on the lookout for that. The plan is tomorrow there will be a new podcast on Wednesday that will be hosted by Bobby Melendez. He will be hosting that show, and he might have a few surprises for you as well, as I'm going to be taking a little bit of time off here in the summer months and not doing every show, and we're going to have Bobby hosting a bunch of shows as well. I am scheduled to do an interview with a very big name on Thursday, someone you're all going to want to hear from. I don't want to say who it is in case it does fall through. Scheduling interviews on podcast, it's very challenging because everyone's schedule is a mishmash. So trying to get times, but I think we have a time worked up for Thursday. If that time gets moved, hopefully I can still record it with them on Thursday. And so we should have that show on Thursday. Like I said, it's someone you're going to want to hear from. One of our biggest interviews we've probably had on the podcast ever. So you're going to want to hear that. And if it does get pushed out, then it does get pushed out. Things happen. So, but all depending on what time I record it. As of now, it looks like I should be able to drop it on Thursday's show. If not, then we'll drop it on Friday. Hopefully on Thursday, we have a very big interview for you coming with someone who's never been on the podcast before that I know you will all want to hear from. I know my audience, and I know you guys will all want to hear from this person. So be on the lookout for that. Also, check out the website. We got a ton of new articles up on the website. I wrote something over the weekend. Brett Legassi, he wrote a great article. Matt Saranek wrote a great article. Bobby Melendez wrote a great article. We have a ton of new articles up on the website. Be sure to go to the website, DolphinsTalk.com, and check that out. Also, for those of you who are on Twitter, follow me on Twitter at DolphinsTalk, at DolphinsTalk. What else? I know some of you hear about this podcast in other ways. I know some of you have heard our mentions and plugs on SiriusXM NFL Radio. I know some of you have heard our mentions and plugs on 790 The Ticket. I know some of you have heard our mentions and plugs on 560 WQAM. And so for those of you who aren't on Twitter but want to reach out to me, I can be reached via email. That is at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. You can reach out to me that way. I usually respond to the email a few times a day, and I am all over the email. So for those of you who aren't on Twitter or Facebook, you can reach out to me just via email, because I know many of you have heard about this podcast not via Twitter and through other outlets we are mentioned on and that we are on as a guest. So feel free to reach out to me via email at DolphinsTalk1977@gmail.com. Also, be sure, and wherever you listen to this podcast, always to always be sure to subscribe to it, whether it's on Podbean, SoundCloud, iTunes, whatever. You know the places. Subscribe to the podcast, and if you want to leave us a little rating and a comment, by all means, go for it. And also be sure to support and head to the websites that re-air this podcast. They are FinFanatic.com, FinFever.com, TheGruelingTruth.net, Dolphin-UK.com, as well as the Facebook pages, The Miami Dolphins End Zone, Fanatics, and Dolphinatics. So, everyone have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.